Chapter 29. Overture and Out. It's barely dawn, everything washed in thin gray light. The joints of my flute slide together with soft clicks, the smooth barrel so familiar to me it's like an extension of my arm. I press the keys a few times, loosening my fingers, and take a deep breath. Crouched in the grass, I get dewdrops all over my jeans and think it's lucky I wore my beat-up old boots because I'd be slipping all over the wet ground if I were still in those horrible, pinching, tight uniform shoes. Those are deep under my bed again, right where they belong. Standing up, I look at Mrs. LaRue. She gives me a single nod, not looking the least bit bothered by my ugly old boots. The other four maestros stand in a row beside her, and for a minute, I get a terrible wave of déjà vu. It's all so similar to 2 nights ago, and my first test with its disastrous result. After the storm, Mrs. LaRue had taken me not to her office, but to her own private rooms in Harmony Hall. There, in a cozy chair by a crackling fire, with Wink curled on my lap, I'd told her everything. About my composing, my initial fear that other Amelia was haunting me, and how the ghost had turned out to be my mom. The headmaestro had listened, asked a few soft questions, then fallen silent for a long while. I had no idea what would happen next. Would I be expelled, punished, barred from music craft altogether? Instead, she'd surprised me with another option entirely, the chance to redo my test. Jai was mad when he found out. "They're testing you again. After you just saved the whole school, they should be handing you the key to Harmony Hall." I pointed out that it was me who put the school in danger in the first place, and I did play a black spell, which is kind of illegal. "Who cares?" He waved a hand. "They can't send you home, Amelia. They know you're a composer now." Looking down at my echo tree with the maestros standing around me, I pause and consider. Do I try composing a spell and risk ruining this if I mess up? I know I'll never get another chance. Mrs. LaRue still doesn't tell me what she expects. She just waits for me to play. It's another riddle, another shot in the dark. Or is it? I stare hard at the tree, my spirit rebelling. I'm tired of playing games with them, of trying to guess what they want, who they want. I couldn't be the other Amelia for them, and I couldn't be the perfect Mistwick student. I can only be myself. So that's who I decide to play for. Not for Mrs. LaRue, or Mr. Pinwhistle, or Miss Nurani. For Amelia Jones. Me. I compose a short green spell, with a quick tempo and a major key. Instead of watching my fingers to be sure I hit the right notes, instead of watching the tree to be sure the spell is working, I close my eyes and trust the music inside. When the spell is over, I lower my flute before opening my eyes. I wait a moment, knowing the risk I took was huge and likely will cost me my dream of Mistwick forever. But this time, if I fail, I'll know I truly gave it my all. When I open my eyes, I see my echo tree leaning crookedly in front of me, bent at that awkward angle, imperfect once more. It's out of place, it's weird, and it's real. Not a copy of any other tree in the whole forest. Just completely itself. I smile at the tree. Then finally look up at Mrs. LaRue. She's smiling too. "Amelia Jones," she says. "Welcome to Mistwick." I catch Miss Nurani before she follows the others into Harmony Hall. We're standing on the front steps, overlooking the glimmering lake. Beams of sunlight stream through the trees and glint on the water's gentle waves. Hard to imagine that less than 2 days ago, that lake was a swirling funnel open to the land of the dead. Right now, it looks as peaceful as a painting. "Is this real?" I ask her. She laughs. "Go back to the Echo Wood later today and look at all those trees. Look closely." She raises her finger, as if letting me in on a great secret. "They may look perfect, But once you get close, you'll see each one has its flaws. Its crooked branches, its awkward knots, its lumpy bits. We never wanted a perfect musician in you, Amelia. We wanted an authentic one. Someone unafraid to be herself, even if that meant risking everything. Because that's what music craft is really about. Finding your own voice and being brave enough to use it. Embarrassed, I looked down at my shoes. I guess it took me a while to figure that out. Amelia, she continues, you're a composer. That's no small thing, and we're lucky to have you here. We'll begin searching for a maestro to instruct you. Unfortunately, none of us here has the gift, but don't worry. We'll make sure you learn how to use this skill, so nothing like this ever happens again. Thanks, I mutter, but it's an inadequate word for what I feel. My own maestro to train me in composing? It's more than I could have dreamed. But there's still something I have to say to Miss Nurani. I try to find the right words. That first test, before the storm happened, I know it was you who voted for me against the others. I wanted to say thank you. Her eyebrows arch up, and she looks surprised.
Oh, Amelia, as much as I hate to admit it, I wasn't the one who voted for you.
What? She smiles, patting my hand and then pointing down toward the lake, where a lone figure stands on the dock.
He was.
I blink hard, sure she's pulling my leg. Mr. Pinwhistle?
I know he's a grouch, but really, he's one of the best teachers here at Mistwick. Mr. Pinwhistle is one of those special people who sees not how good you are, but how good you could be. And then he pushes and prods and aggravates you until you reach the potential he sees in you.
I thought he hated my guts.
Yes, I imagine he's been a bit of a beast, she chuckles. But now you know it's not because he hated you.
He believed in me. When everyone else had written me off, there was Mr. P, fighting to keep me at Mistwick. I don't think I'd have been more surprised if she'd told me it was a humfrog who'd voted on my behalf. Miss Nurani pats my shoulder.
But Amelia.
Yes? She sweeps her hand, gesturing at the mess around us. The storm has left debris all over the grounds. Leaves, sticks, plants torn up by the roots, broken glass and trash blown out of bins, all scattered around the lake.
You're not totally off the hook.
All things considered, getting stuck with groundskeeping duties is a pretty light sentence, even if I'm not allowed to use magic to do it. After breakfast, I head out with work gloves and a wheelbarrow to start on the mess. Looking around, I sigh, realizing it's going to take days to get the grounds back to normal. But it's a small price to pay for staying at Mistwick. I start by the girls' dorm, picking up sticks and cracking them in half before tossing them into the wheelbarrow. Soon, I get lost in the work, and it's much nicer than transposing homework.
It'd go faster if you didn't crack the sticks before throwing them away, a voice points out.
I spin around. Jai. He's standing with his own set of gloves and wheelbarrow. He grins.
Did you think I'd let you have all the fun? I mean, groundswork? Hello? It's the best. Gives me a chance to show off these.
He flexes his skinny arms. I laugh. Yeah, keep that up and you'll pop those balloons you call muscles. Then I see six more students walking up with wheelbarrows, gloves, and rakes. All are seventh grade aeros, including George and Claudia and Colin. Seeing me stare, they just shrug.
The storm knocked out the internet, George says. No computer lab until it's fixed. And classes are postponed until the afternoon. What else are we going to do? Study?
We all laugh like he told the world's biggest joke. The sun rises higher. It's the warmest day we've had all month. I toss my jacket aside and work in my I'll be Bach t-shirt. Good thing chicken poop washes out. It's my favorite shirt. There's a fallen branch jammed in a pear tree at the corner of the gym, and I struggle to pull it loose. Instead, it breaks in half and I topple backwards, landing hard on my butt.
Need help? Someone asks. I slowly turn around. Sure, I can't be hearing right. Darby rolls her eyes and steps around me. With her height, she easily dislodges the branch and tosses it in the wheelbarrow.
Honestly, does it suck being so short all the time?
With a grin, I take the hand she holds out, letting her pull me to my feet. Does it suck being so tall that everyone thinks you're in 10th grade?
Actually, it's kind of awesome.
We stand awkwardly for a moment. Then Darby blurts out,
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have treated you the way I did, or blamed you for things way out of your control.
I shake my head. You don't have to apologize, really. We've both had a rough time lately. She pulls off a glove and holds out her hand.
I guess we're even then.
I grab her hand and shake it. Even. She coughs and puts her hands in her pocket, looking suddenly shy.
So, Phoebe told me if we still want to change rooms, we can do it over winter break.
Oh. I look down, wincing. So,
I figured it's just a lot of work to change rooms, and I'm pretty sure I'm the only person who can sleep through your snoring, so.
I don't snore. But I start to giggle. Okay. Out of the goodness of my heart, I'll let you be my roommate in the spring, Hamako Bradshaw. But only because I'm lazy and don't want to move.
Right. And only because I'm too selfless to inflict you on any other poor girl.
You really are a saint.
Yeah, well, all I can say is they better put a statue of me down by the lake. I did kind of save the whole school.
You did?
You said it yourself. You couldn't have done it without me.
Impulsively, I step forward and hug her. After a moment's surprise, Darby hugs me back.
Oh, and Miss March asked me to pass on a message. She says, when you're done cleaning up, she needs you to clear out your mailbox. Apparently it's overflowing.
My what? I look at her blankly. Darby gives me an odd look.
Your mailbox. Where you get your mail. In the back of Harmony Hall. You didn't know about it?
Nobody told me I had a mailbox. I bet it was announced the very first day, when all the new students had arrived, but I was up in the headmaestro's office, finding out I was never supposed to be at Mistwick in the first place. I don't even have a key for one.
Do you have your whistle key?
Well, yeah, I reply, taking it from my pocket, but...
Give it here, dummy.
Darby grabs my key and twists it, and to my shock, the holes realign to form a new sequence of notes. She hands it back to me, and I twist it back and forth, my mouth hanging open.
You mean you haven't checked it even once? She says. You've probably got 40 million letters in...
But I'm already running away, ignoring the branches and leaves I'm supposed to be cleaning up. I run as fast as I can to Harmony Hall, where I finally stop to ask a senior where the mailboxes are. She looks at me like I asked where the sky is and points to a hallway. Racing down it, realizing I've definitely never been back here before, I can feel my heart pounding. Skidding to a halt in a room lined with little mailboxes, just like in the post office back home, my eyes fix on one with my name on it in gleaming gold letters. I twist my whistle key so that the second set of notes is ready, then play them in quick succession. F, F sharp, B. The mailbox bursts open at once, and a torrent of letters falls out. I stumble back and stare at the envelopes piling up on the floor. It takes a while. The last one, bigger than the rest, lands with a little thunk. They're from Gran. They're all from Gran. She must have written almost every single day since I've been gone. And all this time, I thought she was ignoring me on purpose. Sorting through the pile, I find the envelope with the earliest date on it and rip it open. The letter inside is full of the kinds of things I'd expect. Gran asking if I remembered my shampoo, if I liked my roommate, if the food had enough fresh veggies in it. But the last line catches my eye. P.S. There's no use in emailing me, as I have forgotten my password. My stomach sinks. All this time I was emailing Gran, and all this time she was writing to me, and neither of us knew it. She must think I was ignoring her. Amelia? I turn around and see Miss March staring at my pile of letters in astonishment. Is it okay? I stop and have to swallow. because I realize I'm on the verge of bursting into tears. Can I have the morning off from cleaning? I swear I'll get it all done after. It's fine, she says gently. Let me get you a bag for all this. Minutes later, I walk out of the mailroom hauling my bag of envelopes. It'll take hours to read all of Gran's letters, and then I know I have to do what I've been putting off for weeks. I have to call her and tell her the truth. The whole truth. One envelope I keep in my hand. It was sent just last week, and it's the one that was heavier than all the rest. There's some kind of little box inside it. I rip it open as I walk back through Harmony Hall. In the lobby, a few older students are lounging on the sofas and rugs, glued to a news story on the TV about some castaways being rescued from a tropical island. Wait a minute, says one of the kids. I know those people. Isn't that... Move, Guppy, calls out another, just as I walk by. You're blocking the screen. Sorry, I mutter, scurrying off as I unfold the letter. My dear Amelia, I suppose you're still upset with me for lying all these years about your mother, and I want you to know I understand, and that I will always love you, even when you don't wish to speak with me. I pause to wipe my eyes. No, Gran, that's not it at all. I have to explain everything to her. Wait till she hears I met my mother, that I got to hug her. Gran's letter continues. This was your mother's. I suppose it will do more good in your hands than it's done sitting in my jewelry box. She would have wanted you to have it. I expect in a few years you will have one of your own, but until then, perhaps this one will encourage you to always follow your heart, even when a stubborn old goat like me is too afraid to let you go. Love, your Gran. With a little gasp, I turn over the envelope and a little jewelry box slides out into my palm. Inside it is a glittering gold music note, my mother's maestro pin. Heart pounding, I go back to my dorm room and spend the next 3 hours reading Gran's letters, my heart pinching every time she asks me why I haven't written back or called. The rest is mostly updates on our neighbor's vegetable gardens and Mrs. O'Grady's chickens, and how Gran's book club is feuding again over what to read next. In other words, all the normal, boring, wonderful stuff I've missed most about home. When I'm done with the letters, I carefully pin my mother's golden music note on the bulletin board over my desk. One day, not long from now, I will earn the right to wear it myself. If I work hard and practice often and always stay true to myself, then I can become anything, even a maestro. But for now, I grab my flute case and head for the door. As of today, I'm an official, no strings attached, honest to Bach student at the Mistwick School of Music Craft. I've got class to attend.